There was definitely way more grit than grace. You know, I've had an amazing career as a performance coach and personal trainer, but I think like lots of people in my space, I was definitely born out of a failed career as a sportsman. Had I not turned up for training in the rain and, you know, struggled through injury, winning, losing, becoming graceful at both, those are huge life skills. But I don't play for Arsenal today and it still cuts me deep.
You did take on the ultimate challenge of training our former Prime Minister at a difficult time in the country's life.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
It's such a unique scenario to be on the inside and watch things unfold in a time that we'll probably never see again. Brexit and a lockdown and a pandemic. You don't get a more stressful environment than that.
How do you deal with single-minded, obsessive leaders? How do you get them to do what you say?
It's a very good question. And the answer is...
Performance coaching, when you started, was that a thing?
I coined very early on a phrase called the business athlete. How do we take the learnings from elite sport of movement, of recovery, of nutrition, of gut health, of mindset, and how do I stop your incredibly stressful life killing you?
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasco. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasco, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. My next guest is a celebrity performance coach and award-winning fitness expert with over 15 years' experience in health and well-being. He's dedicated his whole career to improving the lives of some of the highest achieving and most influential individuals in the world. As fitness editor at Esquire magazine and a regular contributor to the Times newspaper, his breadth of experience and knowledge then led him to set up Pillar Wellbeing, alongside running global wellness retreat programs in luxury hospitality. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Harry Jameson.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Right, Grit and Grace. Let's start off. Talk me through how you got started in fitness. Give me the young Harry.
The young Harry?
Yeah.
There was definitely way more grit than grace, I think, as a younger man. You know, I've had an amazing career as a performance coach and personal trainer, but I think like lots of people in my space, I was definitely born out of a failed career as a sportsman. I played almost every sport going, absolutely loved football and rugby and athletics, and we were chatting off camera before about ferrying your children around to and from sporting events. I definitely owe a great deal to both my parents who, despite not living together, probably spent most of their time in cars dropping me off at sporting venues across the country. Got to a decent level, county level, and then followed my passion into university. Did sports science, combined honours at Liverpool University with psychology. So really early on looking at how the mind and the body can culminate to produce a performance, whether that's latterly a business performance and then very much around athletic performance. So I was very sporty, I was very cocky, I was quite gritty and I was not that graceful.
You talked a bit about failing and you talked about the professional sports career that you wanted that wasn't meant to be. Frame that for me and how did that feel? How did it feel to not quite realise your dream at a young age?
I described it then as failure, but at the time, I probably never got close enough to being a professional for it to have felt like a failure. I think if you asked a teenage or even younger version of myself, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would have said a sportsman. And so I'm not one now, therefore I would have considered that aspiration to be one that had failed. But I was always one of the best in my school, very, very good at county level. And then when you move beyond that, I kind of got found out. And so when you move into sports academies and trials for professional clubs, that's where I would have fallen short. Not through enthusiasm, but definitely just for the skill level. And so I spread bet and did loads of different sports and probably didn't specify or go into something specific early enough. And I definitely didn't feel like a failure. If anything, I'd managed to use all of the amazing transferable skills from the worlds of sport and fitness and apply them to other parts of my life. So had I not turned up for training in the rain and, you know, struggled through injury and known what it is to be a leader on the pitch, know what it is to have triumph over adversity, know what it is to create camaraderie, teamship, leadership, motivation, winning, losing, becoming graceful at both. Those are huge life skills. So definitely not a failure from a life skill acquisition perspective, but I don't play for Arsenal today and it still cuts me deep. But now I get to take my son to watch them play.
Performance coaching, when you started, was that a thing? So if you rewind to Harry's early career, how much was understood about exactly what you've described, which is the mix of ability, mindset, grit, grace that it takes to succeed?
So I coined very early on a phrase called the business athlete. How do we take the learnings from elite sport and apply that to a high level business executive like yourself, or someone running a country, or somebody running one day running a country? How do you take the principles of movement, of recovery, of nutrition, of gut health, of mindset, of pre-performance routines to produce consistently over time high level performances? Now, whether that is Clive Woodward, who was the England rugby manager, said high level sports about getting results out of people, high level business is about getting results out of people. And that's very true from a sort of collective perspective. But how do we get results out of you? And how do I stop your incredibly stressful life killing you? That's the dramatic version. So, you know, businessmen and women were never looking, the wellness industry didn't really exist. You had trainers who were trying to get to burn fat and gain muscle. And we were looking at heart rate variability, stool sampling, which is not very glamorous, but essential when we're looking at gut health and immunity. We were looking at sleep quality, stress responses, cortisol, swabbing for cortisol, which is, you know, one of your main stress hormones, which, you know, can go on and have huge impacts on mental, physical and emotional well-being. This is in 2010. So very much pioneering wellness over fitness and very much pioneering performance from the sporting context and moving that into the business world. And so getting people now to understand that is much easier because everyone's got a Whoop on their wrist and everybody kind of understands daily step count and gut health became very topical and definitely amongst, you know, the business that we're talking about now with Better Gut. But it wasn't then, and we talk about it like it's quite commonplace now. And so getting those executives to buy into habits and behaviours that don't only drive today's performance, but also offset the chances of things going wrong in the future, again, was quite forward thinking. You know, longevity is quite a buzzword now. Everybody kind of thinks about health span over lifespan. Longevity, living long, happy and disease-free lives is a huge challenge. But with 90%, north of 90% of all disease being lifestyle-based, we did a lot of lifestyle coaching to protect future health and optimise what they were doing today, like we would with an athlete.
How do you deal with single-minded, obsessive, tricky leaders? Because it's well documented that you've trained some very high-profile people. How do you get them to do what you say?
Trust. I think I managed to get some of the clients that I had and climb the career ladder and path that I did because people trusted me. And I could relate to them and the struggles they were going through. I'd coached many of their peers and people who they knew, so they knew that that was the due diligence that they needed to do to make sure that I was the right guy for the job. And in 90% of those scenarios, the 1, 2, 3, or 4 hours a week that I would spend coaching them was the only time of the week where they were being told what to do and not telling everybody else what to do. And that kind of shift of power requires a huge amount of trust. And for some of them, it was just probably a nice relief. for this hour, the world isn't coming at me. I am focused on myself, my fitness, my mobility, my breath work, my stretching, my weightlifting or running or whatever we were doing. And it was very much a cathartic release of stress for them, as exercise has probably become for you and myself as we've got a bit older. Less focused on how quick I'm getting when I'm running and more focused on the fact that I'm not thinking about anything else when I'm running and getting that kind of mental de-stress. So that's quite a long-winded way of me saying that building rapport and relationships with individuals and getting them to trust you because you're getting results and the outcome that they want is how you get them to do what they want. And with a few sort of tricks of the trade, by distracting people that they're actually doing cardio while they're doing it, or holding a plank while they're holding it. But it becomes part therapy and part training. You know, you become very trusted confidant to those people, and they'll tell you about their troubles and their relationships and their challenges and their kids. You know, no matter where you are on life's ladder, from a hierarchy perspective, all of our human problems are exactly universal. You know, health democratizes everything. We've all got challenges with sleep and teenage kids and struggles with colleagues. Some are just on a global scale and some are slightly pared back. So I think making sure that you are empathetic and listening is a skill, allows you to build trust and rapport, and that becomes very useful as an overall life skill, not just as a coach.
Harry, talk to me about some of the famous people that you've trained, in as much as you're allowed to discuss it.
I've had the privilege of working with, you know, people running countries, people running massive, you know, biggest sports clubs in the world. The former CEO of EasyJet, who went on to run ITV, and a couple of actors and actresses. And I think that you alluded to it before. These are people in positions of huge influence and huge power. And for a very long time, having structured training regimes around diet and exercise and around sleep and gut health and around mobility and looking after their bodies was completely alien to them. It wasn't something that anyone would have thought about. And I think if we look back at the City in the 80s or hedge fund managers in the 90s, you know, Wolf of Wall Street's not a million miles away from lots of the lives that those people were living. And I think if you look now at the men and women in those senior positions, they are doing half Ironmen and running marathons, and a huge portion of that population don't drink alcohol anymore and are doing plant medicine retreats and silent retreats and meditations and a massively holistic view on how you get your body and mind into a position where you can win, because they're highly competitive, those individuals. And for a long time, they did themselves no favours, because by the time they became successful enough to enjoy the spoils of their lives, either their mind gave up or their body gave up or both gave up. And I think that that whole culture in elite business, whether that's entrepreneurship or C-suite business, or leadership of countries, is not, you know, slightly overweight, swilling red wine at lunchtime. It's, you know, almost the opposite of that.
And you did take on the ultimate challenge of training our former Prime Minister.
I did.
At a difficult time in the country's life.
Yeah.
Talk about that and what it's like to have that level of responsibility, and how you work with someone who has clearly got a lot on his mind, and also where it's being well documented as to whether or not you're getting results.
I think, you know, it's such a unique scenario to be, you know, on the inside and watch things unfold in a time that we'll probably never see again. You know, combine, you know, political allegiances aside, you combine Brexit and a lockdown and a pandemic and a very, you know, severe case of COVID, coupled with a geopolitical situation which is ever changing, you don't get a more stressful environment than that. And so without putting together some measures around physical movement, breathing, stretching, and just time to work on yourself just for a little bit each day, how do you expect somebody to perform at a good level and make decisions? And I think we actually have a negative mindset around the way that we treat the leaders in this country, regardless of what political party you're aligned to, I think those people should have time every day dedicated to making sure that they're in a physical and mental state to be able to do a good job. So, you know, we worked and we lost, you know, a significant amount of weight, made some, you know, lifestyle changes that hopefully went on to positively impact emotions and physicality and gave you a chance, almost in an impossible situation, to battle yourself through.
Has he kept it up?
I haven't seen him for a little bit. But he loves running, and he'll always be out running, you know. And actually, you know, I got to know him pretty well, and I think we have, you know, often we talk about armchair sportsmen. You know, we sit in our chairs and we shout at the TV, you know, of what we would do if we were in that situation. There's a lot of armchair politics that goes on, and I think that people, you know, the man in the arena is a very powerful, brilliant speech. And I think that before everyone gets too high horsey about stuff, you have to really respect people who put their hat in that arena and try to, rightly or wrongly, you know, do the best. And, you know, if your body and your mind are taking an absolute hammering from stress and pressures, external and internal, you need a program to help you cope with that. Whether you're running a country, whether you're running a business, whether you're running a household, you know, without some form of self-care routine, for me, it's almost impossible to get through these things unscathed. And I think that, you know, greater support should be given, definitely to people in politics, because it's not a job that I would ever want to do, but in business and in all areas. And I think hopefully if we see an experience that he may have had during that time, that should make its way somewhere into policy somewhere, because it's not just for the senior guys, it's for everybody in this country needs to have a little bit of a look at how they're able to put habits and steps in place to help them survive what it is to be human, because it's not easy.
Let's talk a bit about women and the women in your life. Mm-hmm. We're very proud to have you as an investor in and a supporter of the Better Menopause. And our business is all about helping women in midlife mm-hmm. to thrive. What's different for you about training women, full stop, and training women in midlife? And what are the lessons that we can all learn from your experience of working with lots of different women in different circumstances?
So I was raised by a single mum. My school was actually an all-girls school. My year was the first year where they let boys in. And I said to my mum, I don't want to go there, it's all girls. My mum said, darling, one day you'll thank me. And I definitely did. So I spent all my life sort of growing up in a very female heavy environment, and I think gave me maybe a different understanding of just interacting with women and understanding the different pain points that women face during their careers, because it's way more challenging to be a successful C-suite executive and a woman. And there are many, many different challenges that will come to you. You know, I was lucky to work with a woman who was running Chelsea Football Club for 20 years, the woman who was a, you know, former CEO of EasyJet, which became the biggest airline in Europe. She then went on to, you know, be the CEO of ITV, went through double hip replacement. You know, these women have all had a couple of children and have gone through the extreme physical rehab. You don't get a bigger physical rehabilitation than getting your body back after having a baby, and getting your career back, and managing your relationships, and leading from the front. And so I have the hugest admiration for all women, really, but definitely for women who are able to carve out that kind of niche of really successful business persona alongside mother, alongside partner, alongside, in some cases, grandmother. And I love your business, and I love, you know we know each other well, and I think that enough has been done. I've talked about what it is, the steps that are in place and the support that's in place for women after they have babies is awful, actually, even in the private side. And so I think I've always thought that is a huge area that everybody needs to do more in. But now with menopause and female hormonal health and the transitions that women are going through becoming much more prevalent on the forefront of the conversation, and what support is available. And men go through hormonal changes too, and I think that shouldn't also be overlooked. But the challenges of of mood, of recovery, of sleep quality, of, you know, the reduction in muscle mass and then, you know, bone mass leading to osteoporosis and lots of other different challenges. You know, if you are experiencing perimenopausal or menopausal symptoms, the time in your life you feel like doing the least, you've actually got to do a bit more, right? You've got to lift weights, you've got to get your step count in, you've got to put a structure in place that gives you a chance to win, you know? Like I was talking about the executives before, if you're going to have a better menopause, some of those habits and behaviours, whilst you might not feel like doing it then, or be capable of doing it then, you know, mentally, I think putting some right steps in place that give you a better chance to come out the other side with the best possible result, your food, your exercise, your resistance training, your sleep quality, your mindfulness routine will have a huge impact on that. And, you know, I worked with some amazing women on that. And there are some nuances and differences, many, of how you would train men and women through those processes. Women listen a bit more and do what they're told a little bit more.
Do they? That's interesting.
They do.
If you had three pieces of advice to give to women in perimenopause and menopause about managing their health and fitness and performance, what would they be?
My top three. Yeah. I think the first one would be find a way to incorporate some level of resistance training into your routine. I'm speaking to an avid resistance trainer, so I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but the importance of lifting weights and maintaining muscle mass, I think there's still been this huge misconception with lots of women about lifting weights and getting bulky, and then people not wanting that bulky look. But you will experience, you know, through the hormonal changes, a loss of muscle mass. And we know that lean muscle mass is a great contributor to longevity. It's going to have you feeling happier and healthier the later you go on in life, but it's also a massive sign of aging. So women, I find you can reframe things as anti-aging and there's a better adoption to it. And literally resistance training can be seen as an anti-aging technique.
So okay, that's number one.
Number one.
Number two?
Number two is managing your nutrition and trying to keep your blood glucose pretty stable. You know, we have quite a big tendency to reach for sugary foods that are going to give us a quick hit, make us feel better temporarily. You know, a bar of chocolate because I don't feel great. We know what that does to blood glucose and leads to crashes in energy. So the steadier you can keep your blood glucose, the better.
Three.
And number three is prioritize your recovery. You know, be kind to yourself. Sleep is the ultimate anchor of recovery. So if you can create a wind down routine at the end of the day, often people's minds are going at a million miles an hour, too much blue light, too much caffeine to try and keep you awake. Managing sleep and having a pre-sleep routine that includes some breath work, it might include some manifesting and some journaling. Get yourself into a nice, relaxed place before you go to sleep every night. It's going to give you the best chance to wake up energized and actually feel like doing your exercise the next day.
How do you coach people to have grit?
I think it's grit is learnt, in my opinion. It's often learnt through adversity. And I have this conversation with my wife all the time. How do we make sure that our children, in a world that is removing resilience building life experiences from them on a daily basis. You know, no one's supposed to be offended by anything. And participation medals, you know, no one's losing. You know, everyone turns up and everybody wins, is a poor representation of what life's really like. There's some awful people out there and people are going to say things that offend you, and you need to become a little bit more robust in order to deal with those things. Right back at the very beginning, we talked about, you know, being a failed sportsman and how that impacted me. But again, me reframing that not as failure, but as life lessons. You know, we either win today or we learn today. You know, which one of those two are we going to take on? And there's massive learnings between the both. You know, you have to fail at stuff and you have to physically push yourself through things that are difficult. And that's the best way to teach grit. So I think, you know, not everyone needs to run a marathon, but I've run three. And honestly, there's times where I would have given anything not to have been there. But when you can physically push yourself through things, that gives you a great positive life transference into business, into your marriage, into your interpersonal relationships with lots of different people. It builds grit and resilience. So get people to do physically difficult challenges and allow them to fail and reframe that failure as a positive. And I think that's how you can build grit.
Talk to me about gut health and why managing and understanding gut health is important for women in midlife.
So the gut-brain axis has been well documented. We know that there's neurotransmitters going in both directions, with the majority, you know, north of 90% of serotonin being produced in the gut. As you experience midlife changes, there's often massive dips in mood. And we're seeing, you know, depression, stress and anxiety, you know, really elevate amongst that demographic. If the second brain, as we now reference, the gut, is responsible for producing lots of the happy hormones, then it would make a huge amount of positive sense that you need to have a happy, healthy gut. Stress is bad for your gut, and it's a very stressful time for lots of people. So making sure you have adequate dietary fiber, a really high quality probiotic, you do some cardiovascular activity and reduce processed foods as often as you can have as much of a positive impact on your overall mood and the way that you feel as it can, you know, over the other, alleviating the other stress symptoms like IBS, etc. So it's hugely important and should be prioritised almost over everything.
So you are not target audience for the Better Menopause.
I am not.
You are not, but the women in your life and the female clients that you coach at the highest level are. And we have two products as part of the Better Menopause family right now, which deal with gut health and deal with sleep. But coming up, we've got a new product that addresses metabolism. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about what happens to women's metabolism in midlife and what we can do to manage it.
I think people know your metabolism slows. So, and essentially, you know, the base amount of calories that you need goes down, but your calorie consumption does not. And that often, and your daily movement is often restricted. Therefore, I'm still, you know, pouring the same amount of petrol in my car and I'm doing half the amount of miles. The body's a master adapter that ends up getting stored as fat, and people gain weight, and that in turn can help them or can contribute to them not feeling great. So a slower metabolism either needs to, you know, it's such a simple, unfortunate equation, which is calories in, you know, and calories out, calories expended versus calories consumed. And if somebody can make sure that they're getting movement in on a daily basis, we can really boost that amount of calorie expenditure. It doesn't have to be wild gym sessions with someone who's feeling lethargic, but it definitely can be daily step count, definitely can be movement, it definitely can be your commute every day or the walking of your dog. There's some really quick little simple wins here to make sure that we're still expending the right amount of calories. That then contributes to releasing endorphins, which then contributes to you feeling a little bit better. But as your metabolism slows a little bit, you do need to manage the amount of calories that you consume. Not just the amount, but also the quality of calories. And so again, you know, it's quite a typical thing for a health and fitness professional to, you know, wave a flag and say, you know, fitness is the answer to all of these things, but it really is a key anchor as we age. You know, your cardiorespiratory fitness or your VO2 max is the best predictor of longevity beyond smoking. You know, if you've got a low VO2 max, i.e. you're out of breath walking upstairs, you know, your life expectancy is shortened more than somebody who smokes. So making sure that you can keep cardiovascular fitness and making sure that you have some level of resistance training, not only just through the perimenopausal or menopausal stage, but as you age generally, is the best way to age well. We'd all like to be running after our grandchildren and looking and feeling happy and confident with or without our clothes on, and a fitness regime that doesn't have to be over the top, but three times a week of doing something will have a huge positive impact on that.
How easy is it as a performance coach to take your own advice?
Well, it was very easy when I was 25 and I lived in a gym. And, you know, as you know, have gone into entrepreneurship, have founded, you know, a couple of wellness-focused businesses, become an investor in the space, you know, spend a lot more time you know, raising money from investors and speaking to my board and managing my product and driving and flying all over the world with Pillar, our private health club business. So I've had to drink the Kool-Aid way more, and almost my life kind of shifted into that of one of my clients. So I definitely manage my breath work. I definitely take time to enjoy hobbies, which is huge, you know, much to my wife's dismay sometimes. You know, I play golf and I find that hugely relaxing. I lift weights 3 times a week. I run 3 times a week. I have a little kryptonite, which is wine. I love drinking wine. And so I have to manage my wine intake and caffeine, actually. You know, I love coffee and definitely never drink it after, 2 in the afternoon and really look at my sleep. So I definitely abide by what I say or have said over a long period of time, but also recognizing when I'm not, you go through periods where you feel stressed and you feel knackered and you're probably not nice to be around and you're a bit snappy and the decision making is impaired. And when I feel myself getting into that state, I do something about it. I will take a half a day off, or I will go and do some saunas and some ice baths, or I will just go for a long run and listen to a podcast. And I think you develop a bit of self-awareness, and not listening to those warning signs is something I probably would have done as a younger man, and maturing into somebody who can be self-aware enough to recognise when those things are coming can stop them tipping over the edge and becoming problems mentally, physically and emotionally.
What can women in midlife do, and what's your view on supplements?
We touched on gut health, and I think a really, really quick win is a high quality probiotic like Bettergut. You know, we're looking at the gut brain axis as being really key in terms of neurotransmitters going in both directions, your serotonin being produced in your gut, or more than 90% of it. So if you want to be happy and healthy, you need a happy, healthy gut. And it's a really great way to supplement alongside a diet which contains a lot of natural dietary fiber.
And sleep, do you hear from women in midlife that they can't sleep?
I hear from women of all ages that they can't sleep. I think if you've had children, you'll understand that huge pressure on your sleep. And often that sleeping pattern never gets refound. I think something like Better Night is a fantastic way to ease yourself in as part of your wind down routine. We talked about breath work, removing of blue light, having some reading. Another great tip for sleep is allowing your body to cool naturally after a shower. For your body to naturally produce melatonin, it needs to reduce by about 0.5 degrees Celsius. So get yourself hot and then allow yourself to cool. Get yourself a really great sleep supplement like Better Night, and stop looking at your phone before you go to bed.
Harry, if I were to ask you, is it really this hard? Are there exercises that you and I could do now in my living room that's going to make a difference to how I look and feel as a woman in midlife?
I would say there are many exercises that can make a difference with how you look and feel in midlife, but do yourself a favour and get out of your living room and get somewhere conducive for that. It doesn't have to be a gym full of intimidating people, but I think, I write a column for The Times every month and lots of journalists ring me and say, what can we do in my living room for 5 minutes that will change my life? The answer is not very much. The answer is slide your chair, don't do dips on it, slide it underneath the table where it belongs. Get yourself out and dedicate at least half an hour, at least 3 times a week, to yourself. I think we went through a fitness revolution into a wellness revolution, and we're now moving to a place of self-care. I think it's a really, really great present for yourself to dedicate half an hour to mentally, physically and emotionally putting yourself into a better place.
We talk a lot on the podcast about burnout. I don't love the term, it's something that I've experienced myself. Have you ever felt close to that? And what do you do when you see clients that you're coaching where you feel that's what's happening to them?
The answer is yes. I've definitely felt on the edge of having those symptoms and pushing yourself. I think any entrepreneur who's been through a fundraise, anybody who's been through a change at board level, anybody who's founded their own company, has had to push themselves to those levels in order to be successful. It's not for the faint-hearted, this game, and there are times in which you need to push yourself beyond what really feels physically and emotionally possible. That's not to say that it's good for you. Athletes push themselves right to the very, very edge all the time. You can't do that all the time. You can't run a marathon every other day. You would burn out. But we're expected to do that as business founders, and we're expected to do that as entrepreneurs, sometimes as parents, sometimes as leaders. And without recognising that and recognising the need for recovery, I think you are not putting yourself in the best position to win, although it feels essential at the time. I've had to prioritise my recovery, not just physical but mental, a lot over the last 3 or 4 years. And whether that's taking time out from my phone, from my computer, to go through some anti-inflammatory practices, whether that's cold and hot, whether that is mindfulness, meditation, breathing exercises, I've had to include those things or else I would have burnt out. I think, you know, adrenal fatigue and you know, the more medical end of what it feels to be burnt out. Some people sit there waiting for, you know, for a diagnosis. I think we're awful in the Western world in general about waiting for things to break medically and then trying to do something about it, rather than having a preventative and preemptive approach to one's health. You know, and burnout is a kind of physical thing that manifests itself mentally. You know, you can't just keep emptying the well every single day. You know, we talk about stress, or the analogy I've used about stress is that my body's capacity to deal with stress is like a bowl, and stress is like water from a tap. And if I turn on the tap and I put it into this bowl, sooner or later, my capacity will be reached and breached, and it will spill over the edge. And that might become an emotional breakdown. It might be a stomach ulcer. It might be stress and anxiety. However, there are things I can do to give myself a bigger bowl. And as long as I come up with coping strategies and methodologies that increase my capacity to deal with stress, because it's not going anywhere, the stress, then I can become a bit more resilient and a bit better for a bit longer. But sooner or later, I need to turn that tap off a little bit and get some rest. So exercise, nutrition, the people around me, hobbies, mindfulness, you know, this whole kind of ecosystem of wellness and recovery is designed to give me a better bowl and stop me, a bigger bowl, and stop me from burning out.
I named the podcast after my life mantra about grit and grace. What's your mantra?
God, I'm going to steal yours after that.
I think yours, you have it if you want
yours, I think yours is pretty good. Yeah. My mantra is, it's a quote from Seneca, one of the Stoics, and he says, as long as we live, we must keep learning how to live. And I think that adapting your life as you grow through the ages and the seasons and not being stuck in your ways but continuing to learn and adapt will give you the best chance to be happy and healthy. And I think wellness, the best definition of wellness is happiness. And I think as long as we can move towards a place where we're happy, we've got to keep learning how to live.
Harry Jameson, thank you.
Thank you.
Harry Jameson is a real star, and he is a performance coach to some of the biggest names in Britain. So just listening to him was a real education. I think what I took from him were real lessons for women in midlife that I have heard, but not quite all in one go like that. And that is lift weights, eat protein, and focus on your recovery, because we can all control how we feel and we can all control performing in the way that Harry has advised many people to be their best selves. But I suppose the final takeaway was life's for living, and that wellness is happiness. And that's something that I need to remind myself of, because whilst life can sometimes feel like a grind, if you're really investing in how you feel, then you can find and embrace joy. Thank you so much for listening today, and thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time, as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.